Hello, my name is Jen Hickey. Welcome to the WEN podcast, a series of conversations with people as they share their WEN moments. Recognizing these times can change our destiny, help us to stop hiding behind the past or clinging to a future that may or may not happen. This podcast is about recognizing the power of the WEN moments. Hello and welcome back to the WEN podcast. So in this week's chat, I am talking to Liz Yates, CEO of the Marie Keating Foundation and cancer survivor. A truly remarkable story which has many moments of tragedy, which led her to a life full of purpose and service. In a really cruel turn of events, Liz was diagnosed not once but twice with two different types of cancer. And today, Liz reminds us of what we can all do to try and prevent this happening to us. While cancer is on the increase, treatments are getting better, and we hear about the amazing work the Marie Keating Foundation continues to do every day. Thank you. Liz, thank you so much for taking the time today to join me on the WEN podcast. I really, really appreciate your time.
Delighted to be here. Thanks, Jen, for asking me.
And in a really, really cruel turn of events, I suppose not only were you diagnosed with cancer once, but you were diagnosed it twice, two different types of cancer. So this is a really personal story. So let's begin with just by going back to perhaps when you first noticed that something might be wrong.
Yeah, so the first diagnosis was malignant melanoma. And that was back in the year 2000. So I suppose going back to my childhood, growing up in Dublin, we were lucky enough to have grandparents who lived in the west of Ireland. So we'd spend every summer, every Easter down there. And my memory is that we pretty much lived in our swimming togs and were out and about all day. And of course, never, ever, ever put on sunscreen as a child. Just wasn't done really at that time. And I suppose my family were quite sallow. Most of my family were very dark skinned. Now I'm fair haired and I have blue eyes, but I would take a tan. And in those days, you know, and probably still to this day, having a tan was almost like a badge of honor. You know, we remember comparing your tan marks to my cousins and my siblings, and you know, the darker you were, the better you were. So definitely had a number of different sunburns over the years. Never thought a thing about it. And then in my teens as a student, you know, used to work abroad during the summer. I worked as an au pair in the south of France, worked in Germany and in Spain, and you know, at any opportunity was out basking in the sun. Just loved being outdoors.
There's just something lovely about the sun on your skin, isn't there? It's just so rejuvenating. And like that, I was the same growing up. We had no education, I suppose.
No, and I think there was almost this perception that you had a healthy glow and that it was almost a healthy thing, that you looked well and you looked better, and that if you had a tan, that it was protecting your skin. But it was only after I was diagnosed then years later that I really began to learn, oh my goodness, skin cancer is actually entirely preventable. And, you know, really we should not be sunbathing at all.
And was it that you noticed a change in your skin?
Yes. So it was, I actually had lots and lots of moles growing up, and I didn't realize, but that is one of the risk factors for developing skin cancer, is if you already have a lot of moles. And I also used sunbeds a couple of times. I had a couple of disasters using fake tan and ended up looking like the map of the world. So,
thinking back to how fake tan was back then, I mean, you really did look orange, let's face it.
And I remember for my Deb's night using this fake tan, which was actually white. You couldn't see it going on to your skin.
Oh, Lord.
And like hours later, looking in the mirror, and I was literally like a map of the world.
Oh, hilarious.
Blotches all over the place. So instead of using that again, I said, oh, sure, I'll use a few sunbeds. and did that before going on holiday, coming up to my wedding. And I have since learned now that using a sunbed really increases your risk of developing skin cancer.
Because
UV rays in sunbeds are 10 to 15 times stronger than the UV rays at the hottest time of the day.
Yeah.
The number one carcinogen.
Oh, Lord.
And they just using a sunbed once increases your risk of developing skin cancer by more than 20%. So sunbeds are an absolute no-no. But looking back now, I could see how I was doing all the wrong things.
Sure.
Sunbathing, I got burnt as a child. I used sunbed several times. And so when I did get the diagnosis, then I suppose I suddenly really learned, oh my God, skin cancer is actually very preventable if you just take the right actions.
But was there a change in your skin at the time? Can you remember back? You obviously noticed something going on which prompted you to go.
Well, actually, I was at the GP with one of my children one day, and the GP said to me, he spotted a mole on my shoulder, which he felt looked a little bit dodgy. And I showed him a few other moles I had on my stomach and on my legs. And he kind of said, look, I'm going to refer you because I think you need to go to a dermatologist. So I remember in the letter of referral, he wrote, this lady has multiple moles. So my husband still calls me the lady with multiple moles.
Oh, gosh.
But when I went to Dr. O'Rean, he immediately said, okay, you have a few here that look as if they are changing and need to be removed. So he had identified about seven moles that he wanted to remove. So I was actually brought in under general anaesthetic. This was back in the year 2000. And when I went in, then they noticed I had further moles on the soles of my feet.
Oh, crikey.
So I ended up having 15 moles removed under general anaesthetic that day.
Wow. So
little scars from my shoulders, from my stomach, from my legs, and three from my feet, which meant I had stitches in my feet and was on crutches for about a week.
Oh, God, that sounds awful. But so can I just ask, your doctor said that he had noticed the changes. Had you noticed anything, or were you just kind of...
No, at that time, and this was way before I actually developed the melanoma. So this was in the year 2000. So at that time, he removed 15 moles. But he said, you need to be very careful because those moles are beginning to change. And because you have so many moles, you should be avoiding the sun and being, wear a hat and don't go out at the hottest time of the day. So I kind of took that on board for a while. And then, of course, every summer you'd go off on your holidays and you'd still get the bikini on and,
Oh, gosh, I know the
enjoy the sunshine.
Exactly.
And one summer I remember sitting, reading my book in the sun lounger and just seeing this very dark mole on my left thigh. And it was kind of almost two color. It was one very dark part of it and one kind of browner part. And then I kind of felt, oh, that definitely looks different. It's changing. So I decided I would make an appointment with my dermatologist. And it actually took me about 3 months.
Can you remember when you say changing, what was going on?
So it was definitely darker than it had been before. It had seemed to have grown a little tail. So it wasn't kind of symmetrical anymore. It was like there was this little extra bit onto it. And one part of it was darker than the other. So it definitely had changed. And
what colour was it then?
It was kind of dark black.
Okay.
One part and sort of brown in the other part. And then there was this little kind of tail. So it was probably about the size of my little fingernail. But it was definitely changing. So as soon as I got back home, I made an appointment with my dermatologist, but I didn't actually get the appointment for about 3 months because there are few enough dermatologists in the country, I've since learned. And, you know, luckily enough, I did have private health insurance, so I was able to go the private route. But I know it takes a lot longer if you're depending, you know, if you're in the public system.
Yeah.
It can take up to years, in fact. And that's the thing with skin cancer, and particularly melanoma. You really need to move fast because it can spread very quickly.
And how long after had you, remember you said in 2000 you had all these moles removed. How long after was this?
This was 6 years later.
Oh, 6 years. Okay.
6 years later. So this, the dermatologist, when I did get in to see her, she immediately whisked me into the Blackrock Clinic there and then and removed it. And while I said it was the size of my fingernail, the scar was like from one side of my thigh right through to the other, because they had to deeply excavate all the tissue underneath the mole to ensure that it hadn't started to spread through the epidermis. So
it was growing underneath your skin.
Exactly. So I could see the changes on the top, but it was also growing underneath. And that's the thing with melanoma. It gets into your lymph nodes and then it can spread to other organs. So look, basically, she said she had to biopsy it and she would give me the results the following week. So when I went back in, she said, yes, as I suspected, it was a malignant melanoma in situ, which thankfully meant it was still, it had not spread. And she said, Liz, if you had not come to me with it, if you had waited another 6 weeks, we would have had to amputate your leg.
Jesus.
And if you had not come to me for another 6 months, you wouldn't be here today. So that scared the living daylights.
Wow, that is terrifying.
And she said to me, you know, have you been watching your moles? You've had moles removed. And I said, well, I had started to, but I haven't really, you know, I hadn't, I suppose, really continued it, because I'm not sure I took it that seriously.
Sure. I kind of think that living in Ireland as well, we have this illusion that, you know, it's not going to affect us because there's no sunshine.
Well, that's the thing. You think, you know, we don't really get the sunshine that you get in Spain and Portugal. But in fact, I've since learned again, the UV rays can be really strong in Ireland, even if it's not a particularly sunny day. They filter through the clouds, so it could be just a cloudy day, but if you're out and about, particularly between 11 and 3, if the UV index is above 3, they can, you know, the rays can still damage your skin, and you can still be you know, get quite badly burnt.
Sure. Yeah. So what was your treatment following?
So thankfully, because it was in situ, I didn't have any further treatment. And that's the thing with advanced stage melanoma. Like, unfortunately, where it's not caught early through surgery, you then have to go on either chemo, or there are new immunotherapies as well. But it's a much longer road and a much more difficult journey. So I learned then to be really vigilant and to attend my dermatologist every 6 months. So my dermatologist doesn't do mole mapping, but she looks at every single mole. She's taken pictures of all the moles I have, and then we can do comparisons. So since then, I have had 31 moles removed. So I would go every 6 months and I might spot two or three that needed to be removed, and she would just do that under local anesthetic. And I, at this stage now, I have lots of little nicks and scars.
It must be like a pincushion.
From my face, from my neck, stomach, legs, back. But I actually haven't had to go for the last few years because I have very few left. But I still check my skin regularly.
And I presume then you're not in the sun anymore.
No, I'm really careful now.
Okay.
I, you know, we still go on holiday. I still love being outdoors. I I walk a lot, run a lot, but I wear a hat. I wear sunscreen every day. Like even in the winter, my makeup I have a moisturizer which is factor 20, and I have an SPF 25 in my foundation. I always wear long sleeves, so
Okay.
even if I'm sitting in the sun in Spain, I'm wearing long sleeve clothing, a hat. I'm under an umbrella. I have sunglasses, and I'm just much, much more careful, and lots of sunscreen, reapplying it all the time. So I've all
Crikey.
yeah no I and I think
That's very
sunscreen.
scary. That's very scary. What were you working at the time, if you don't mind me asking?
So I was a bank manager. I'm a marketing professional, and I worked for 20 years with two different banks. So I worked with we lived in Holland for 7 years, and I worked with a Dutch bank over there in Amsterdam. And actually, while we lived over there, because it's much hotter in the winters, or the summers were always beautiful, and we used to sit outside all the time. So did all the wrong things over there as well.
Because when you look back over it, you can see you've had a lot of sun exposure.
Exactly, over the years, and it can be cumulative as well.
Yeah. And it's just interesting because obviously, you are now CEO of the Marie Keating Foundation, but at the time, obviously, you weren't. So there must have been a shift, a moment you had where you shifted careers.
Yes, so it was I jumped ship to join the charity sector in 2008. And that was a year after my brother Jack, he died from a very rare blood. And Jack was 2 years older than me. And
Oh, gosh.
I remember thinking at the time, I want to be doing a job I love when I die. Like the fact that he died brought my own mortality, I suppose, very close, and you're thinking about, my goodness, life is so fleeting. And I had kind of fallen into banking, but I realized at that time, this is not something I love. And none of us know how much longer we're going to live. So I suppose his death really made me sit up and think, well, what do you want to do? And I decided then I wanted to do something that was more in line with my own values. So I actually ended up joining Concern Worldwide, and I absolutely loved working with them. I have another brother who is a doctor, and he had lived most of his life in Africa, and we had visited him lots of times. And I just through his experiences and working with the developing world, I kind of was drawn into that context. So I halved my salary. Like I had to sort of learn a new skill set, new terminology and everything to get into the charity sector, but I absolutely loved it.
Wow, what a massive change. Amazing.
It was amazing. Completely different type of work. I mean, it was actually very stressful in one way, because I was raising funds for something that was so important, to support people who were dying of poverty, essentially. So, it just brought such an important meaning to the work. And it was just so rewarding. But it was while I was in Africa one day, actually. I was on a trip visiting Sierra Leone, and we were visiting some maternity hospitals, and we actually had Rona Mahony, the current or the master of Holles Street, with us. We were doing a comparison of maternity services in Ireland and comparing those to maternity health services in Sierra Leone. And it was one morning having a shower in the dark, as a cold shower. It wasn't really a shower, it was a tap with a trickle of water in the dark, because you only had electricity for a certain number of hours of the day. And suddenly I felt this lump in my right. Under my right arm, and I kind of thought, that's feels a little bit different. I had had cysts before in my breasts, and they never turned out to be anything serious. So I thought maybe it's just another cyst. But anyway, when I went back to Ireland, I did again, go to my GP, and she felt it as well and referred me to St. Vincent's for a triple assessment. So I had a mammogram and an ultrasound, and they could feel the lump that I had felt. And during the ultrasound, they could actually see another mass within my breast. And it turned out that I actually had two different types of breast cancer in my right breast. So that was actually much more scary.
I'm sure. I'd say you were terrified. And do you mind me asking what it felt like, the lump?
It felt like it was kind of in the shape of a licorice all sorts, you know, like a lozenge, sort of long and hard.
Okay.
And probably about the size of maybe the top of your finger.
Yeah.
A couple of millimeters.
Was it sore?
Hard. No, it wasn't sore. Mm. But what was scary was that there was another mass within my breast. It was called lobular breast cancer, which I couldn't feel at all.
Right. Okay.
That just came up in the ultrasound. So if I hadn't felt the first lump, there's no way I would have known about the second one. And I'm not sure if it would have shown up in a mammogram. So as a result, because I had the two different types of cancer, I unfortunately had to have a mastectomy. Okay. And I remember when I heard that, I suppose it completely floored me hearing the word mastectomy, because knowing that, oh my goodness.
It's a huge amount to deal with. And you just lost your brother. And I suppose also when you think back to a couple of years before, you come through skin cancer. And I don't know, you know, what goes through your head? Do you kind of think to yourself, like, surely I'm not going to be diagnosed with a completely different type of cancer, having gone through one already?
Exactly. And, you know, I would have thought I lived a healthy life, you know, always exercised, was never overweight, healthy eating was a big thing I was always into. And in the meantime, we'd also lost our mum to a brain tumour.
Oh my goodness, that's, geez.
So it was kind of, I suddenly felt, oh my goodness, this is scary. This is the real thing now. And it was a scary place to be. It moved very, very quickly then. Like, I was still kind of coming to terms with it, but you were kind of immediately being referred into to meet your oncologist, who would be managing you from a treatment perspective. But because I had to have a mastectomy, I was also immediately referred to a plastic surgeon to talk about reconstruction options.
Oh gosh.
And I was still only absorbing and coming to the fact that I had two different types of cancer. I was going to need extensive treatment. I was going to have to be out of work for probably a full year. Like, I'd always worked full time. I was scared about telling our kids, you know.
Of course.
My son was doing his leaving that year. Our other two daughters were younger. And
you must have been all over the place. So much to digest. And your other breast was clear?
The other breast was perfect, yeah.
Okay.
It was this right breast. So it moved very quickly then. I met my oncologist, Janice Walsh, who is an amazing doctor. And she was the one who sort of really made me feel, Liz, you're going to get through this, because yes, you have two different types of cancer, but they're still early stages. And I've since learned, you know, the importance of early detection with cancer, with any cancer. Even though there were two different treatments needed for the two different types of cancer, and even though I had to have a mastectomy, and she was saying, yes, you'll go through chemo, you'll need radiotherapy, but you will come out the other side of this.
Wow.
So she gave me hope, and I always knew, look, this is a dark, long tunnel.
And did they begin with the mastectomy, or what way did they start?
So within 3 weeks of my diagnosis, I had decided, yes, I'm going to have a reconstruction, and I'm going to have a surgery involving the mastectomy and then the beginning of the reconstruction at the same time. So that would that meant one surgery less.
Okay.
So essentially, I went in, I think I was in hospital for 5 days. So initially, I had to go in and do a whole load of tests, you know, to ensure that the cancer hadn't spread beyond my breast. In fact, I had a third tumor on one of my lymph nodes in my arm. And that was what that meant, that I definitely would need chemo. Sometimes you can just have surgery and you might not need chemo or radiation. But in my case, because it had traveled into the lymph system, I did need the chemo as well. So I had my surgery. I remember coming out and then I had these two pumps which were taking the fluids out of my breast and out of the lymph system, and being very well bandaged up, but just kind of just seeing this flatness here on one side. And
wow, that must have been a huge shock. I can see even now you're getting emotional. It's I can only imagine. I can feel it actually. And we're on Zoom here and I can actually feel the emotion of looking down. That must have felt so alien almost.
It was alien, you know, like... You kind of take pride in your body image, and you know, I always looked after myself, and
was there a sense of kind of almost losing your femininity in a way? But you know, that you're looking down, there's one breast there, and you know, this has all happened so quick.
It looked so odd, you know, and it looked. I kind of felt, oh my God. I just want to cover up, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Even I remember sending my husband to go and get me these massive pajamas so that they'd be so baggy you wouldn't notice that one side was flat. But look, the nursing team and my doctor were all amazing. And, you know, once I came out of hospital and I finally got rid of the pumps, you are fitted with special bras and prosthesis. Okay. So you know, wearing clothing, then actually you look quite normal.
And I suppose at that time, even though you're, you know, looking in the mirror and you might have the prosthesis on, there's no time to consider anything really. It's also moving so fast. You haven't even understood what treatment you're facing into in terms of chemo and radiation. And Was the mastectomy successful in terms of they got everything?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. They were very happy with it. And in fair, you know, the surgeon assured me, you know, you won't need any further surgery at this point. The plastic surgeon had essentially put in a kind of a deflated implant. It was kind of like a deflated balloon.
Okay.
At the time. And then every 3 weeks, I would go into Vincent's and they would inflate the implant, and that would kind of stretch the tissue in my breast.
Wow.
And that happened over probably a 5 month period until the implant had stretched the skin to pretty much a similar size to my left breast.
Gosh, isn't that incredible?
It is incredible. And like, this was probably the most straightforward of all the different types of reconstruction options. Like, there are other ones where they take a flap of skin from your stomach and they kind of put that over your breast. Or there's ones where they take it from your back. Like, it's wow. Them are straightforward procedures.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might, I didn't qualify or wasn't eligible for those. And this, because I didn't have massive breasts, this was the most straightforward one for me. So after about 6 months, then the right breast was more or less a similar size to the left breast. And then I had to go in for another surgery and they removed the temporary implant and replaced it with a long-term implant. So that was the second surgery.
And are you at this stage going through chemo at the same time as all of this is going on?
No,
Okay.
sorry. I did my chemo first. It was 6 months after my chemo.
Okay.
So I had my chemo after the surgery, the initial mastectomy, and then that was six sessions every 3 weeks. So that was.
How was that? I mean, I've heard so many different kind of stories, and it just seems to be such a hard, challenging journey, the chemo part.
It can be, and what I have learned is that every cancer journey is different, and no two cancer diagnoses are the same, or no two pathways are the same. In my case, actually, the chemo was not the worst. They manage it very well, like depending on what side effects you're having, be it the nausea or be it. In my case, the worst side effect was that my stomach was badly upset by it. So I would go from being very constipated
Yeah.
to having diarrhea and
Oh,
everything
gosh.
in between, and you were kind of swinging from one to the other. But you are taking steroids at the same time to manage pain. You're taking antiemetics to manage nausea. So you're on a big kind of medication regime. And in my case, luckily I didn't, I wasn't throwing up. The nausea wasn't so bad, but every 3 weeks, you've one good week, then you've a week where you feel quite fatigued, and then you'd have a week where you'd have those side effects kicking in again. So, and that can vary obviously from person to person. But
And but mentally, how were you? It sounds so tough. I mean, like going back to when you were diagnosed with skin cancer, coming through that to losing your mother to this. I mean, you must have, like, that's so traumatic.
I was so lucky though. Like I'm very close with my siblings. I think having lost actually two, my sister, another sister died before my brother Jack,
Oh, God.
and having lost two siblings and both our parents, the remaining six are just incredibly close, and my own family, like my kids, were amazing. My husband, and then the support network of your friends. Like I get emotional talking
Oh.
about it. I'll never forget the cards and the flowers and my colleagues in Concern at the time. They sent me this massive big homemade card that they had made with daffodils on the front, and like the whole of Concern had signed it, and people just you really realize how lucky you are to have such amazing support, and it was their help that got me through it. I mean, I would say I am a strong person, and I think I'm more resilient having gone through a few tragedies with our siblings and with our parents. So I guess I was kind of focusing on that light at the end of
Yeah,
the tunnel,
just taking every day.
taking every day. And we're kind of in a similar situation now with COVID, aren't we? Like the tunnel is getting ever longer. Here we are now facing into another 9 weeks before the current restrictions are going to be eased. And that's like for me, and my oncologist kept saying, Liz, we've got your surgery was successful, your mastectomy was successful, you're getting your reconstruction, and I could feel myself getting stronger and stronger emotionally and mentally as well with every day. And like there was lots of bright sides to the journey
Sure.
too. I was for the first time I had time for me. Like I didn't have to work full time, and I was able to go and meet friends for coffee and go on walks.
Did you ever? I just wonder, and funnily, because you just mentioned we're in COVID now, and we've heard lots of people say, oh, like this has happened to the whole world at the same time, because we have to change how we're living. It's this, do you ever remember thinking back at the time, wondering why, what was the universe just handing you at the, like over and over and over again, these kind of like real tragedies for you to try get over? Because it's such a lot to deal with.
Not really. Like I knew, I mean, I suppose I did ask that question about my brother when he was taken from us so early, and his type of cancer was so rare, there was very little known about it. And he had only literally just started his treatment when unfortunately he died, and it was just too late. And in my case, I was reassured very early on that because I'd caught it early, and even though it was two different types of cancer, I knew I would come out the far side. And with breast cancer in general, I've since learned you've more than an 80% chance of surviving it. So I was focusing on I'm going to be one of those 80%. I wasn't focusing on the 20%.
And for anybody that's listening today that might be going through something similar, have you any advice to anybody listening, just if they're right in the middle of it, or maybe they've just got a diagnosis, or maybe they've just found a lump?
Yeah, I would say, if you find anything that you think is new or different or is maybe not, just something that you're a little bit concerned about, I would absolutely go and get it checked out. And hopefully it isn't anything sinister and but you'll have that reassurance. But it could be something. And if it is, the earlier you get to your doctor, the earlier you'll come out the other side. So I would always say, never ignore anything, any signs at all of anything in your body. Always get it checked out.
And there's a real fear at the moment of people possibly not going to their GPs because of COVID. And,
That's
this
right, Jen.
really scary time. Sorry.
It's something we are concerned about at the Marie Keating Foundation because we're hearing from different people who are worried about going to hospital or even bothering, they don't want to bother their GP because they have this long-term cough or, maybe this little thing that might just be nothing. Our message is, if it's different or if it's new or if it's not normal, absolutely go to your GP and they'll want to see you as well. And the services are still running, while screening services are limited, anybody with symptoms is being checked out.
Okay,
And so
that's good to
don't
know,
ever, yeah, don't
because
ever
I
think.
think that people think that a lot of the services aren't. So when did you join the Marie Keating Foundation then?
So it was after my breast cancer journey. I had returned back to work with concern, and then within about 3 months, I kind of felt, what, having been through two different types of cancer myself, and then a role came up at the foundation, and having, worked in the charity sector for 7 years at that stage, I felt I had something to bring to the foundation. So luckily enough, I was appointed as Director of Public Affairs initially. That was back in 2014. So it was literally a year after I was diagnosed, or I had come through my treatment. And I've just loved working with the foundation since then. I mean, we're a small team, there's just 17 of us, but everybody in the foundation is so passionate about what we do. And I
Let's
can just
talk a little bit actually just about what you do, just for anybody listening that doesn't know.
Well, so we're a cancer awareness and support charity. We were established back in 2001, and it was Ronan Keating and his family established the foundation after they lost their mum to breast cancer in 1998. And Marie Keating, she was only 51 when she died of breast cancer. And unfortunately, she didn't go to her doctor. And the family found out afterwards that actually she had a very curable chance of, type of cancer. If she had just gone, she would still be with us today and she
Oh
would
gosh.
be in her early 70s. She was
That's
such a
terrible.
young woman. So they wanted to do something, and Linda Keating is our director of fundraising. And the whole family are still very much involved. But essentially, we raise awareness about the early signs and symptoms of all the top common types of cancer. So, be it skin cancer, lung cancer, bowel cancer, breast cancer. And we have three mobile units and a team of nine nurses. And those mobile units go into communities, schools, workplaces, bringing the message of the importance of early detection, educating school kids or teams of staff or community groups about how to spot cancer early and what the risk factors are and how to reduce your risk of cancer. So we can.
And is there, how do you reduce the risk of cancer?
So we have a campaign called Your Health, Your Choice. It's about the different lifestyle factors that can help you reduce your risk of cancer. So if you eat healthily and have a proper diet and manage your weight properly, if you don't smoke, if you do smoke, if you quit as soon as possible, if you are safe in the sun, so by adopting the Sun Smart Code of, wearing long sleeve clothing, wearing a hat, wearing sunscreen, not going out into the sun during the hottest times of the day at midday, and just being sun smart in general, not using sunbeds,
God, do
then
people still use sunbeds?
people still use sunbeds. And
Wow.
a lot of you see sunbeds in gyms sometimes. You see them, like, there's lots of tanning salons around the city and the country. And even
Even though we have the best fake tan now, like.
exactly. And I always found it really ironic that we were lucky enough to go to Japan on holiday one time, and I went into a shop to buy sunscreen. And I bought this product, and when I put it on, I realized it wasn't sunscreen, but it was the equivalent of fake tan, except it was to make your skin look whiter. Like in Asia, the whiter your skin, the more beautiful you are. And here in the West, we just think we are
We're
obsessed
obsessed. We're
with
obsessed
them
with the tan.
looking. My daughters, they brown up every time they're going out. But I would say, look, if you must have a tan, wear a fake tan because it's so much better than getting a real tan or using a sunbed. But going back to those lifestyle factors, so if you do at least a half an hour of exercise or physical activity every day, the more the better. And I know you're a Pilates expert, Jen, but that type of act, the resistance training is really, really good. To reduce your risk of developing cancer in the first place, or if you've had cancer in the past, of it reoccurring. So it's exercise, being safe in the sun, not smoking, eating healthily,
What about alcohol?
and moderating your alcohol, exactly. So staying within the recommended limits, which is 11 units for a woman per week and 17 for a man. And a unit is not like a glass of wine, it's a very small measure.
Ah, we don't want to hear that.
I know we don't, and
Particularly now, in the middle of COVID.
but I know, and look at we're not saying don't ever drink, but
Sure.
we do say, just be mindful. We've done some research actually during COVID, when and people have admitted that they've gained quite, I think it was 30% of people said they had gained more than 5 kilos weight during COVID.
Geez, that's a lot. Crikey.
People are smoking more, people are
Wow.
drinking more, and thankfully most people are being more physically active.
There's definitely going to be a backlash, though, isn't there, in a couple of years, probably from this and people's lifestyles. And like, of course, everything you're saying makes sense. But I, even for some of us, there still seems to be this increase in cancer, even though you hear all the time people that really, even you said yourself, you'd always been healthy, you looked after what you were eating. Is there an increase of people just developing cancer despite looking after themselves?
Yeah, so in Ireland every year approximately 43,000 people are diagnosed with cancer. And that's to do with how our population ages as well. So the older you are, the risk is higher. But The great news is that more and more people are coming out the far side.
Okay.
So as treatments improve, as people are aware how they can reduce, and depending on which type of cancer you have, the survivorship rates are improving all the time. So that for us and the Marie Keating Foundation, that's why we're really promoting that message of early detection and prevention. And going back to those lifestyle factors, like with those five pillars, making sure you get your vaccinations as well, going for your screening, like your cervical check screening, your breast check, your bowel check. You can reduce your risk by as much as 42% if you do all of those
Wow,
things.
yeah.
Huge, yeah. And then even if you do develop cancer by catching it early, again, the survivorship chance is much higher. So,
You have to be so body aware, I suppose, particularly you noticed a mole changing, you obviously were examining your breasts. I mean, is there a better uptake of people doing that now, examining breasts? And,
yes.
yeah.
Yes, so breast check attendance is quite good, but you will always have approximately 20% who don't take up their invitation. But we always say, like, in addition to the mammogram, check your own breasts like once a month, just whether you're under the shower or looking in the mirror, just feel around your breast for any type of lump or any change, even if it's anything unusual like puckering or dimpling in the skin of the breast, or if there's any discharge in your nipple, anything unusual at all, just go to your GP and get it checked out.
And what age do you have to be in this country to get a mammogram?
50.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems old. It seems is what's the reason behind that? Because I've had a few friends that were diagnosed well before 50.
Yes, and in cases where there is a family history or a genetic mutation, the BRCA gene, which is, I don't know if it's often called the Angelina Jolie gene, and that predisposes you to developing breast cancer at a younger age. So for wherever there is a family history, you may be referred for genetic testing. And in that case, you can develop breast cancer at a much younger age.
Okay.
But actually, that is less than 10% of all breast cancers are through the BRCA gene mutations. So the general population, the age from between 50 up to 65 is based on the incidence rate. But we anecdotally we're probably seeing more younger women as well. We will be obviously in dialogue with the National Screening Services about perhaps bringing the age for breast screen down to encompass younger women as well.
I wonder, what do you think the reason is for that? Do you think stress plays a huge role?
The science is that it isn't, but I remember at the time thinking in my own case that it must have played a role because I was under a lot of stress in my job and I probably put that on myself.
I suppose you can be unlucky, just the best will in the world. You could be doing everything you're saying and just be unlucky.
That's it. Thankfully, the treatments are really improving though, and like all the research that is going into cancer treatments, like there's a lot of really wonderful drugs now that are not toxic and really are extending people's lives hugely. Like in some types of cancer, like testicular cancer or prostate cancer, the survivorship rates are way up in the 90s.
Amazing.
Breast cancer and skin cancer, like melanoma, while it is only 5% of all skin cancers, it accounts for 75% of deaths. But it's almost entirely preventable.
Yes,
So
that's
if
it.
you
Yeah.
so
Let's talk about the stats then for a few minutes.
in our rates of skin cancer in Ireland are increasing faster than any other type of cancer. And that's why, we would run kind of summer campaigns every year, highlighting how people can just, you know, adopt that SunSmart code and check your moles if you have any moles, or check any changes in your skin. Like I'm a bit anal now after my own experience.
Well, I don't blame you.
Like a tan is actually your skin cells telling you they're being damaged. You know, it's the melanin in your skin reacting to the UV rays. And so there's this myth that a tan, oh, that's a healthy glow. You know, I don't get burnt, I tan easily. Well, actually, having a tan is already bad for your skin, you know. And there's that cumulative effect. And we have really great information on the Marie Keating Foundation website about all the different types of skin cancer. But yeah, they're all quite preventable.
Okay.
Providing you, you know, just take those measures to be careful in the sun.
Yeah, gosh, it really is. You've had a really, really tough journey.
Look, I'm here to tell the story today. And, you know, we see, obviously, in the Marie Keating Foundation, we're dealing with cancer patients of all ages, all types of cancer. We're supporting people through their journey. And then what's wonderful is that we're seeing more and more people coming out the other side. But we're also very conscious of ensuring that people that are helped through the journey, you know.
How do you do your fundraising then?
Well, we rely mainly on our own fundraising. Like at the moment, it's quite difficult because with COVID, obviously, we're not allowed to run fundraising events. We would have done golf events, runs, you know, cycles, etc. And of course, we can't do that. So at the moment, we're doing everything online.
Yeah,
we transitioned both our services as well on our mainly online. But from a fundraising perspective, at the moment, for example, we have a challenge, which is Your Health, Your Choice. It's a challenge whereby somebody, you know, could sign up and do 20 days of steps and do 200,000 steps within 20 days, and reduce your risk of cancer thereby doing. But also, you know, for a 20 euro participation fee, you're supporting the work of the Marie Keating Foundation. We also, you know, we work with a lot of the corporate sponsors, particularly those in the pharmaceutical sector. So, for example, for our skin cancer campaigns, those that produce melanoma drugs, our skin cancer drugs, might support our awareness campaigns.
Your campaign last year was brilliant with Donal Skin doing the barbecue.
Yeah, we've had some brilliant campaigns.
Really clever.
And they're all on our website, by the way. Yeah, Donald Skean was fantastic. So he was like, one of the statistics is that men in Ireland have a greater risk of developing skin cancer than any other country in Europe. So we were finding that a lot of men who were barbecuing outdoors or playing sports outdoors, like be it on the GAA pitch or whether you're a golfer, whether you work outdoors, like all the professions, landscapers or builders or construction workers, you're outdoors. And a lot of men think, oh, you know, I don't, you know, they kind of poo-poo using sunscreen. But we ran this campaign called Skin Chancer, that you're actually taking a big chance by not wearing sunscreen and you're really putting yourself at risk. But it was particularly targeting men who were outdoors for sporting or for work reasons.
Who might assume just at that stage of their life, oh, it's not going to affect me or
oh, yeah.
Be bothered. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, I get a tan. I don't need sunscreen. Mm. But I, you know, particularly men who are bald.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. My husband.
My husband,
a dermatologist, once told my husband that he was her retirement fund. I never laughed so much. Because she saw men all the time coming in and out with little skin cancers all over the bald heads.
Yeah, no, really wearing a hat outdoors, like it, yeah.
So simple. I mean, it's so simple.
Yeah, ex- exactly. And so good sunglasses as well that really give you good proper protection.
That's another thing I you would never think about, the sunglasses,
Yeah, you
particularly in
can
Ireland, you know.
get ocular melanoma. It's like it's in your eye, and yeah, so we do advise people to wear good wraparound sunglasses as well.
Wowzers. Liz, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing in the Marie Keating Foundation. It's incredible. And I'll have everything up on the website, but also just today for telling your story, because it's you've really been through a lot, and you know, you never know who you could be helping by telling your story. So I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jen.
Guys, if you're enjoying this podcast, maybe you could share it and subscribe to the podcast, and come and check us out at thewhenpodcast.com. Thank you so much.